Good afternoon, or good evening. It is 5:30, and I saw an orange bucket outside a couple of days ago that I believe you can buy at Home Depot, and it says it's a construction bucket, and it says on it, "Let's do this," and it's time to do this. Let me start out by saying completely off the budget line, and I was privileged to attend a tech run of a play at the Kitchen Theater the other day, and by the way, I'm not going to let all of you talk, it was a tech run of the play called Buyer Seller, and C-E-L-L-A-R. It is a story about a man who gets a job in Barbara Streisand's basement running her mall in her house, and the person who runs the mall also acts out all the parts, Barbara Streisand, James Brolin, other people. And it's performed by a young man named Carl Gregory, who's an IC grad, and the kid is amazing. He runs for an hour and 40 minutes nonstop, and let me just say, I'm not a big play person, if you know what I mean. I go to plays. My wife is on the board. Sometimes I walk away feeling bad, and I don't like to do that, and thinking about the play. I always like being able to go to a play and hum a song when I leave, but this play is just totally entertaining and incredibly funny, and Carl Gregory does an amazing job. So if you don't have a ticket, let me know. I can point you in the right direction, and so can Will. And you should all go see it. But at any rate, enough of that. The opening remarks from me, and then we will have Joe do some a little bit. The accounting administrator presented with a 1.3 levy increase at the September 1st meeting. What was interesting to me is the Ithaca Journal wrote a story about we had some savings, and there were some things that we did well, but we're still going to ask for a tax increase of 1.3%. And it occurred to me at that point that many of you have been here for a good length of time, and Tompkins County through the years has had sometimes a rocky tax levy. If 1 year it would be next to nothing, the next year it would be 5 and 6 and 7%. And, you know, I think what we have to do and keep in our own minds is you look to the future sometimes. Things look good today. They may look great tomorrow, but the stock market takes a dip. And, you know, we're all in the human service business. We end up, you know, having to hunt for money to do certain things. And so, you know, I'm not really here, and I don't think any of us are, to justify a 1.3, but I think it's a legitimate increase, and we will be able to do that at the end of this process. So, and I'm not particularly annoyed at that, but it just seems to me it's an opportunity to show what we know and do on one hand, and always keep in mind that we have taxpayers paying these bills, and we should look to save a little money here and there to keep us flush going forward. So, Joe?
Yeah, I really don't have much to add. We went through the budget pretty thoroughly the other night in session. I do want to explain the giant sheet that's in front of you. We talk about how the budget is a great document. It's easy to read. It makes it easy to make decisions. And then we prepare different documents to help get through. This is a summary of the OTRs. We blew it up big so you could actually read it this year. We've shared this with you. This is the internal worksheet that Kevin and I use to keep track of OTRs. Several years ago, we began to make it available to you. And I guess to keep it in code, we made it in micro print so you didn't understand what was in there. At Mike Lane's suggestion, we made it larger this year to make it more easily to read. Yeah. It is very much in shorthand. So I would encourage you still, as we're going through the OTRs, read the OTRs, because the departments really spend some time to explain why these requests are so important to operations. So I don't want this to be to the detriment of the longer OTRs that are in your books. The way to read this, first the color coding, If you see the pink line, it means that I did not fund the request. That doesn't mean that I don't agree that it's a good request. I simply didn't have the resources to make available for that request. If there's any humor in this, it's that you'll see that many of the requests that were denied came out of my office. So I actually denied my own over-target requests. But if it's in pink, it means that the request was made and it's not recommended in the budget that's in front of you. Still, you'll have a chance to review those requests, even if they weren't funded. If they're in yellow, it means they came out differently than they came in. So I may have gotten a request for a certain amount of money for example, the sheriff's overtime. In the end, I may have given them some money, but not all that they requested. And that's what that yellow signifies. There's been a change from the request to what's in the recommended budget. If it's not colored at all, it means that it's been recommended, it's been funded in the budget as it was presented to us. And then if you look across the top of these large pages, you'll see requested and recommended. And in the very top row are the summary numbers. We put the tallies at the top, not at the bottom. So you can see that $3,275,000 in total requests were made. A little bit of that, $33,000, was to be supported with recurring revenue. A little bit of rollover was applied, and we'll talk about rollover as time goes on. It's kind of late out of the chute this year, so not much was available. One time is what how it reads. These are dollars pulled out of our reserves to pay for, in general, non-recurring expenses, one time. And what's left is net local. You can read that to mean it's supported by property taxes. So you can see that about $2.2 million in property tax support was requested. And then if you go to the next set of numbers, you can see that by the time it came to you, that number had been whittled down to $896,000 in property tax-supported OTRs, a total of almost $2 million have been recommended. So hopefully this is helpful. It's a crib sheet, but again, please take a look at the actual OTRs when they get to that place. I think the only other thing I would add is that there was kind of a surprise announcement late last week with respect to pensions. The comptroller announced that pensions weren't going to go up, they were going to go down. And so that's different than everything that we had been told up to last Thursday or Friday, including signals from the comptroller's office itself that it was going to go up. So we are looking at that, trying to figure out exactly what impact that will have on this budget. It will have an impact. But give us a little time to work through all the numbers and see how it affects reimbursement rates for departments like DSS and so forth. And then as we're going through this process, we'll talk about maybe things that we will want to look at or adjust because of that new important news that came out of the comptroller's office. So that's, I think, Jim, those are the only things that I wanted to.
Okay, let me just say one other thing. The process will be the same as it has been for my 4 or 5 years here. You raise your hand, I will call on you. It's questions, some discussion, but frankly, I don't want to get deep in the weeds. We have a tight schedule to follow, and I think department heads appreciate the fact that we can keep that schedule, and I would hope that we're able to do that. You may turn on your cell phones. Please turn off your ringers. Martha, you had your hand up, and then Carol.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe. This looks really handy. Do I understand? So if something was requested and it's in the reserves column, it's a one-time expense, and if it's in the net local, it's a target or ongoing expense?
Yes.
Okay. And really, $500 in your own department for participation in community events.
You've got to draw the line somewhere.
Boy, oh boy, you know, that replaces your hit on youth services every year. So thank you very much.
Carol.
Yeah, I'm looking for some clarification on how to read this. There are some places where, even if it's in color, it seems like the amounts are the same. I had a couple of examples. Now I've lost them.
I think I see one, Carol.
Like line 32, the History Center.
I think that's the only one. I noticed that, too, earlier. I think that's the only one where we didn't make a change. That came in, at $15,000. The request was at $15,000. After talking to Rod Howe at the History Center about the request and about how to reformat the request to do some things they wanted to do with Historic Ithaca, he pulled it back and resubmitted it at $25,000. That's why it's still color-coded. Okay. And I think that's the only exception to the rule.
And if you if they requested recurring money and you recommended it out of one time, then it does show up in color, or it might not?
It should show up as yellow. So a good example there would be in planning. Planning requested that several items, which we have funded for several years in a row as one time, they asked for those to be made target. And that's on the top of the second page. You can see that we've kept them as one-time or reserve funded.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Workforce. Come up and sit by our friend Kevin McGuire. And we are on page, section 4, page 309. They have no OTR request. Welcome. You're number one.
Thank you.
Yep.
Joel told Diana and I last week that our presentation was going to set the tone for the entire budget process.
But no pressure.
No pressure. No worries. Yeah, so
since we're on pins and needles.
Well, we've been since then. So thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to you about our 2016 budget request. Our 2016 budget request of $504,916. As you can see, there's an asterisk there because the local funding is reflected in your budget in the interfund revenues and not in the net local. So what you'd be looking at, it's reflected in the interfund revenue, and that's just how the budget is set up to fund the portion of funding for the Workforce Investment Board and for the Career Center. So the $68,669 is the local funding that's requested. That amount is a decrease from last year of $441. So that gives you a sense of what we're asking for in terms of local dollars. Our FTEs have remained constant since 2005. So it's myself and Jennifer Liu, and as I said, constant since 2005. We have no OTRs as a component of our request. Diane's going to quickly go through Diane Braddock. She is the director of the Tompkins Workforce New York Career Center, is going to go through the Career Center request, and then we'll jointly talk about some of the challenges and goals for 2016.
So as you can see from the budget pages, it's very similar to previous years. Again, the asterisk meaning that the local funding is reflected. So $53,223 is the local share that we're asking. As far as the full-time equivalents, same. We remain pretty constant from 2013, 14, and 15. We've been able to add staff as needed, ebbed and flowed and so on, with either volunteers, other community grants that we've gotten, and AmeriCorps. Okay. And we have no OTRs as well.
So I'm just going to talk a little bit about some of the major influences on our budget for 2016. I've come to this group a few times to talk about the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. Law was passed in July of 2014 and went into effect this past July, so July of 2015. But there is a staggered implementation line, so there are, a staggered implementation timeline. And so there are some components of the law that go into effect July of 2016 and then July of 2017. So for us, it's an ongoing process in terms of coming into compliance. The Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act is our primary source of federal funding and regulations. It does have a new and increased programmatic emphasis for job seeker services. I think all of you know it changed our membership requirements, and I'm happy to say that our board, we recently were notified by the State Department of Labor that our board is in compliance with the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. And then it focused our youth programs, which is a substantial portion of our funding, focused our youth programs and increased the age up to 24. So from 21 to 24, that was a big change for us.
A really big positive change for us.
Absolutely. It allows us, opens up a much larger population for us to serve with the youth programs. Major influence is always what's going on in the economy and unemployment. I will say, as the unemployment rate has gone down and our pool of candidates for jobs has gone down as a result, it's created the, you know, we're back to where we were prior to the economic downturn with more job openings than candidates. And when we do have candidates, they frequently don't have the right skill sets that are needed for the job openings that are available. So that is something that's a real challenge for us. Our phone rings constantly with in the one-stop center with employers. Don't you have any candidates for me? I have this opening. I need to fill it. Don't you have any candidates?
So the WIOA changes have really provided a new focus for us, not only the focus on governance, but definitely the focus on operations and how we do our service delivery. So part of what we're doing right now is really looking long and hard at business services and what businesses are asking for the job seekers. We're looking at skills, what are their basic requirements, where are the gaps, and how can we assist with local training and actually using the training dollars that we have to help them. Oftentimes it involves creating career pathways, looking at the folks that are internal and the folks that want to come in and where those openings exist and where and how we can fit people within. This past year we ran a sector series, which we identified 7 primary labor areas and talked with businesses. We had panel discussions. We brought in focus groups, and we brought in job seekers to learn more about specific skill sets, training, and what the growth opportunities are. What we heard pretty specifically across all the board was that people needed to attain their high school equivalency. It used to be called GED, and that's no longer the case for the state of New York. It's HSE, high school equivalency. And so that's been a major push. We've partnered now with Adult Literacy, and we have 2 sessions on site, and we're rolling people through those classes. It's a lot tougher exam than it has been in the past, and the training is much more specific and more time-intensive to get people prepared for those. That's one of our really major goals, is to help people both with a high school equivalency and if they're not college bound, to make sure that they have the certifications that they need to match business needs right now. We have also continued our collaborations with TCAD, with the Society for Human Resource Management, to really listen to them about what they're seeing and how to incorporate that on a local level and translate that to job seekers. And then we've continued to focus on the WIB, or the workforce strategy, and their 6 goals, and really actualizing some of the goals and making sure those action steps are valid for the job seekers as well as the businesses.
So in 2016, just to highlight a couple of our goals and plans for the year, we in the past year met or exceeded our state, federal, state, and local performance measures. We served 1,642 customers in between July 1, 2014 and June 30th of 2015. That's our program year. Our youth program, specifically the year-round focused youth program, was able to serve 80 youth with intensive case management. And our average earnings of customers placed and retained, so that's of the folks that actually were placed in jobs, were still working a quarter later, and then we look at their earnings in the third quarter after they exit programs. So we're not just looking at can we place people, but can we place people and have them be retained in their position. So of the customers placed and retained, the average earnings was $29,234, which results in an additional $20.2 million in our economy based on the number of customers that we serve. In 2014-2015, which is our most complete program year, as I said, we were able to invest over 78,000 in funding to train 76 people. So that's just more intensive training investment than more what we call entry-level job seeker services. And then also in 2016, a big focus for us will be implementation of a federal workforce innovation grant that we partnered with the Herkimer-Madison-Oneida Workforce Investment Board on. So that's a grant that's 9 regions, will allow us to hire a full FTE, but they will be employed by the Herkimer-Madison-Oneida Workforce Investment Board, but they will be local here and at the Workforce New York Career Center. That position will focus on re-engaging college dropouts. I know that nationally there's always, you know, there's consistent focus on engaging high school dropouts, but there is a, you know, the next balloon of issues is the number of folks who are going to community college, going for 1, 2, 3 semesters, not successful oftentimes because they're academically not prepared for college-level courses, dropping out and having substantial student loan debt after 1, 2, and 3 semesters. And so this is to re-engage them in community college and other types of training in order that they will be able to capitalize on that on that degree and that training and be able to pay back their student loans, frankly. Those student loans are not forgivable and follow you around for a very long time.
Okay, so one of the goals for this next year is to strengthen the collaborations and partnerships. Some of that is being defined by WIOA and what we do, but we also have a lot of grants and partnerships that are already out there using other sources of funding. So these are just a few of those. We're using new technology. We're using a new product called JobZone. And JobZone is a place where you can put your resume in, you can get lots of information, assess your skills, match yourself with the job market that's out there right now, and then get constant email reminders about jobs that you may be able to apply to. We're also, for the first time, investing in virtual job fairs. I don't know if anybody's ever attended one. We're doing it for the first time as part of the Southern Tier. You actually go online, and the whole job fair is online. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. The rest of these partnerships and these programs are really designed to help people who are in higher need. So we've already talked about the why and the where. This is just the how. How do we make this happen with all these different partners and these different programs?
And then lastly, in terms of goals and plans, I think many of you are aware we're partnering with TCAD to complete the Industrial Development Agency to complete a manufacturing skills assessment. Our goal is to have that assessment completed before the end of 2015 with plans for implementation of whatever recommendations come out of that skill assessment in 2016. I will say that in terms of that manufacturing skills assessment, we anticipate and we know from local employers that there's a real need for manufacturing skills training, and I'm talking really specific, not just blueprint reading and shop math, but how do I actually use a mill or a lathe, and so hands-on training. So implementation of that of those recommendations we anticipate in 2016, and we have already been seeking out funds for that implementation from the Upstate Regional Initiative, and we will be in the future as well, through the CFA process with the Regional Economic Development Council, local businesses, and the IDA in terms of where we'll be seeking out funding from. Our hope is that we can meet any of that we can meet any funding needs to start that training program in 2016. If there are gaps, we may be coming back to the county in 2017 looking at over target for implementation of those requests.
And in front of you, you may have a multicolor brochure. It's just a spotlight for Tompkins Workforce New York. It highlights a number of our different programs, all of our partners, some of our services and collaboration. We thought it would be helpful as we move ahead. We all will do some changing. They'll be rebranding us a little bit. We may end up having yet another name and so on, but for right now, this will help as you talk with your constituents. We thought it might be helpful to have that in hand.
Thank you for that question. Peter Stein.
I wonder if you could give me a couple of numbers. One is I'm interested in how many people you try to find jobs for in a year. And then secondly, how many do you find jobs for? And third, how long do those jobs last? And I understand it's very rough numbers, but I'm just curious as to how that works out.
There's several different programs we have. We have the youth program, we have adult, and we have dislocated. And those are the folks that actually enroll in the Career Center and visit with us 1, 2, 3, 4, or on the average 5.5 times. Right now, that number is 78% actually receive a full-time job after that. And then we're measured on that. We have performance measures that we have to do 6 months later and then a year later. So right now we've done a real thorough analysis on the training component. Like as people do training, does that training actually end up in the job that they were trained for? And we're doing an analysis on that, and that should be available within the next 6 months.
And does that employment last, or what fraction of those people continue to be unemployed, employed a year from now or something like that?
We have the answer to that question, but not off the top of our head. I would hesitate to give you incorrect information, but we are measured by the state and Fed regarding the number of customers that are retained in employment. I want to say it's in the 70 to 80% area, but I would want to be, and we can provide you that information back, but I would want to be make sure we are correct in the information provided.
Okay, thank you very much.
Anyone else? Carol.
Yeah, I'm interested in the disconnect that we hear about and that you mentioned between the number of people who say they're unemployed or underemployed and hearing from employers that they can't find enough people. And, you know, what you're doing, what strategies you're doing or might be able to do should you have the funds, to make those match more closely. And then specifically, we hear about it lately, related to the construction trades, that we see this incredible boom in construction. And we hear from the developers that that their contractors can't hire local because there's not enough people. And then we hear from the local tradespeople that they're not getting hired. So are you the right place to deal with that ladder and trying to match them up? And if not, who would be?
Diane mentioned as she was speaking about the fact that we're regularly talking to employers, connecting with the chamber, with the workforce board, with TCAD and the Society for Human Resource Managers to find out what is it that employers need that that's lacking in the workforce so that we have the information to help fill those skill gaps. And then also helping create career pathways for individuals. So understanding how people would get to, what are the skills that are needed and how people, and certifications, how people would, what pathway they would have to take in order to be able to fill those positions. Specifically about the construction trades, In terms of what we hear more locally, I hear the same thing that that you hear in terms of what employers are saying and the local tradespeople are saying. Employers are saying there are not enough folks in the local labor market with the specific skill sets that are needed, and that folks are already trained, that they are bringing, that they would like to bring in and recruit from. And we hear from the local trades that they have individuals for the openings. And so we hear pretty much the same thing that's being heard at the local level.
Are you permitted to reach out to the out-of-town, out-of-county general contractors to try to deal with
what?
Well, they're the ones who were who often say, or that we hear, are not able to find the local, but I have no idea how much they do to try to find out the information as to what is available here locally.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just looking for who the right people would be to maybe reach out, find out who they are and reach out to them, but you may not be permitted to work with out-of-county employers.
There's nothing that prohibits us from working with out-of-county employers. In terms of reaching out to them, providing them suggestions on ways to recruit locally is something that we could provide to out-of-county contractors. I'm not sure that would meet their needs. I think generally they have a good sense of what's going on in a local area and what the skill sets are. And when employers use the state job bank system, it's not just Tompkins County specific job seekers. It's job seekers across the entire state. So if they post a job opening on that bank, they can go through, they can actually see resumes of individuals, and they can also do a match of the skill sets that are needed in the for their particular position.
So
they
Will.
Actually have resources.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, Jim.
Go ahead, Will.
Thank you, Jim. Julia, my mind sort of blanked out toward the end of your presentation where you were talking about this new initiative that would talk about very specific technical training, which, did I hear you correctly, that this is something you're just beginning to conceptualize, but you will be looking for funding for that. It's not currently in your plans. I heard you mention the IDA as a possible source of funding. My ears perked up as a member of the IDA. But do you have any sense of the magnitude of that project?
No, not in terms of magnitude. The IDA is actually funding, and Michael will speak more to this in his presentation. I just put him on the spot. The IDA is actually funding the skills assessment. We've hired a consultant who's TCAD has hired a consultant, and we've worked together to identify that person, and they are the ones who will be speaking to the local manufacturers to gather that information. We won't have a sense of what funding will be needed until we have a sense of what it is we need. And also, we are reaching out to other sources.
Okay, thank you.
Martha, you had your hand up, and then Mike.
One of you said the average earnings of customers placed and retained was about $29,000. Average is a funny number. By any chance, do you have a median?
I think I could create that for you, but off the top, it is not something we generally we get an average. And just as an FYI, that information actually comes directly from the state to us. That is taxation and finance information. So our performance is not measured. We're not the ones collecting the information, and it's coming directly from employer information. And so it's something they provide back to us as an average wage.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just it would be helpful. A couple of people at one end or another can really throw that off. Thank you very much.
Michael.
Julia, you mentioned about getting the calls for the jobs that you just can't find people for. And then you did mention a little bit about the manufacturing-specific jobs. Are there other kinds of jobs like that that you're hearing out there people can't find candidates for? And are they then having to go to the region to find these people? And are they paying more money? What's happening?
I mean, and Diane can jump in. I will say that it tends to be the entry-level positions that it's a combination. We have the specialized skill sets, but we've always had a surplus of entry-level positions in relationship to the number of people available to fill those entry-level positions. And so we have the specialized positions, like in more in manufacturing, that we have phone calls. We can't fill these positions, but we also have entry-level. We, you know, on any given day, phone calls from retailers asking for information or for job seekers is real common. Do we see an increase in wages as a result? I think that our hope is that there will be some pressure on from market forces and that will eventually require employers to pay a higher wage for some of the entry-level positions. And we do see cases where employers raise the rate that they're willing to pay because we come back to them and say, I'm sorry, your advertised position, we don't have any folks to fill to even refer to you for your advertised position. So here are your options. You can search for a larger region. You can raise your wages and see if you are getting any more job seekers based on that. And we definitely see employers that are hiring from a pretty large region, and it's not unusual to even hear about folks from Pennsylvania commuting to Ithaca for work.
Thanks. And if I could, one other thing, and you mentioned kind of humbly about having your plan approved and your reconstituted board approved. I know that was an awful lot of work, and really congratulations to you folks on getting that done. That was a monument.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your number one. Is there any, all of you have listened to the first ones, or anyone here who wants to make a motion to approve Joe's budget at this point? No? Okay. Well, Tompkins County Area Development, Mike Stamm, Heather McDaniels are here. Is Section 5, page 65. Welcome. Fresh off a public hearing at the Town of Ithaca.
Hello, everyone. Okay. I don't understand this table at all, but I think you folks probably do because you see lots of those. And if you have any questions, I think Joe could probably explain it to you. Are there any questions for Joe? Good. Let's move forward then. As you know, TCAD made an important decision a couple years ago to rebalance its revenue model, and this is a similar slide to what we showed last year, where our revenue model is now nicely balanced, and it started with the five-year commitment that the county legislature made to TCAD. That, in turn, leveraged a significant increase in funding support from local and regional companies that we call investors. So our investment campaign was successful, and we project that our fee-based income will also carry us nicely through the end of this five-year period, which ends in 2018. Our mission, simply stated, is to create quality jobs for local residents, strengthen the tax base, and enhance community centers. And we really there thinking of some of the work that we're doing in the city of Ithaca and in other communities. And just some data with respect to this slide. The average wage for at least our IDA projects, which is our largest component of job creation, is $34.50 per hour. And that is kind of skewed at both ends of the spectrum. We've done some projects where there's food service, and that's very low wages, but there are a very low number of jobs. And then there's some very high-end wages with the CEOs of some of the tech-based businesses. But generally, the employment opportunities we're creating are, again, pay very well. From a tax-based point of view, and again, this is just for IDA projects because IDA is the mechanism we use to really strengthen the tax base. Since the beginning, IDA projects have paid over $68 million to local taxing jurisdictions. They have paid over $13 million to Tompkins County, and just in the last year, our IDA projects have paid over $1 million to Tompkins County government. Next slide, Heather. And I wanted to take the opportunity to remind folks where we think good jobs come from. Most people always talk about businesses we're attracting. We spend virtually very little, if any, time trying to attract businesses to our community. We're fortunate in that we have a pretty sound existing base of companies that we work with. But more importantly, we have an incredibly strong entrepreneurial environment in Tompkins County with not only entrepreneurs but support systems to help those entrepreneurs create new businesses. And we have examples of companies that started with one person, usually a technology person, that now have 100, 150, 200 employees. And in some cases, those businesses have been acquired, but because of their roots are here in Ithaca, they have they've stayed here. And these are some of the things that we consider when we're, again, allocating scarce community resources, either our staff time, local incentives, state incentives, scarce buildings, scarce utilities, whether a company has growth potential, the quality of the jobs. And something that we really spend a lot of time on, that's the range of jobs created. And I've used this example before, and I'll use it again. If we had enough resources for one project but had two companies, and if one company was creating 50 jobs for people with PhDs and the other company was creating jobs from entry level all the way up the spectrum, we'd be much more excited about the second company. And that's because they're creating jobs for people in our community that need them the most. And to get much, much more subjective, we also look at the leadership of the company, whether they're committed to the community, and we also look at their technology and whether they need to stay here to gain access to the next generation of technology, typically out of Cornell University. And finally, we measure return on investment, how much community resources are going into a project and what is the community benefit. And I'll quote a number out of New York State Comptroller's report. And this was from a report they did that covered 2013. The cost per new job created by our IDA was $595 per new job created. So we're being really, really careful on how we allocate scarce resources. As an example that is kind of counter to that, the big Solar City project in Buffalo, the state's investing $256,000 per job for that project, and that number does not include local IDA incentives that are also being delivered. So quite a difference. And we also have a great track record of, after companies have used the incentives, they don't leave. And after companies have been acquired, they don't leave. And we recently had a company acquired by a Chinese parent, and they plan to stay in our community. So I think it's a testament to how careful we are when we decide who to work with and what kind of incentives to deliver to them. These are some of the things that we do, and I'll immediately draw your attention to the last one. And this is something that Martha Robertson has been involved in over the years, and that's bad federal reports on our economy.
Wait, I want to explain that.
Okay, you haven't been publishing the bad federal reports.
Mm-hmm.
You've been pointing out that you think they're bad, and then we do the analysis and determine that they are. So if you ever read reports on either about how great our economy is from the federal or state government or how weak it is, read them with quite a bit of skepticism. And we spend quite a bit of time looking at the data that comes out of the federal and state government about our economy. And typically it's not great data, but fortunately we have the in-house capabilities to do all the work that you see there and then some. Economic developers typically don't work very well with planners, and we have two planners on our staff and seem to get along. Some of our initiatives over time, and here I'll draw your attention to the TCAD Foundation, which started very recently, and we're waiting to hear whether we're going to receive our first federal grant. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But again, we have a history of starting programs, spinning most of them off so that they're independent, but again, staying very close to them. And right now we're providing staff time to the TCAD Foundation, and we hope that it'll get up and running and be independent of us as soon as possible. Some of the programs and services that we provide, in some cases on behalf of county government via contract, in other cases independent. Two things I'd like to point out, revolving loan fund program that's capitalized at about $1.7 million, very successful and almost getting tapped out. And the last bullet, conduit to external programs. That's kind of a vague statement that really relates to helping local businesses, local government, local not-for-profits gain access to regional, state, and federal funding. I'm on the executive committee of the Regional Council, and just a few days ago we raided over 200 applications for funding for this latest CFA round, as they call it, round five. So TCAD staff not only very involved in ranking the applications that do come in, but Heather in particular helping not-for-profits, government agencies, and for-profit businesses in Tompkins County figure out how to apply for those funds, or in some cases discouraging them from applying. And unfortunately that happens more often than not. And our last slide are some of the things that we're going to be that we started working on in 2015 that will likely carry over into 2016. I think you're all familiar with the Energy and Economic Development Task Force. We're always reviewing how our incentives match up with the benefits that the community receives, and there's certainly a lot of interest in our community with respect to that. Julia mentioned the Advanced Manufacturing Training Study. That indeed is being supported by the IDA. The IDA allocated $35,000 for that project. And we hear from companies as we meet with them on a routine and systematic basis that they're able to create high-end entry-level jobs that pay really good wages, have great room for advancement, but they're having a hard time finding the people to fill those jobs, or they're bringing in new, more technology-oriented manufacturing equipment, and they need to train their incumbent workers to be able to use that equipment. And if we're going to be able to take advantage of the opportunities that these manufacturing companies provide to our community and either unemployed or underemployed people, we need to figure out how to work with these manufacturers to train those people up to take advantage of those great jobs that are available. The USDA grant I mentioned would be for a food processing incubator study. This is also something that's being supported by the IDA, but the bulk of the money would come from the USDA, and we hope to hear from them. They were absolutely sure we'd know by the end of August that's passed, so we're hoping we'll hear soon, and we're very optimistic. And lastly, expansion of our loan fund program. It's been very, very successful, particularly over the last couple years. We're about tapped out, and we're going to be looking for ways to recapitalize that and grow it beyond the $1.7 million level. Our loan fund program has been very effective in helping food-based manufacturers grow from just serving local customers to selling their product to the big urban centers in the Northeast, and also helpful in helping high-tech startups buy a piece of equipment they need to build a prototype so they can then attract venture capital. So expanding our loan fund program will be something that the TCAD will be looking to do in 2016. And those are all of my slides.
Questions? Julie Kiefer, Carol Chalk.
Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Early at the start of your presentation, you showed the three strands of funding for your organization. The printout we have is so tiny, but your slide I could look at. Could you go back to that for a minute, please? Thank you. That model, you said, ends in 2018.
Yes, we have a five-year agreement with the county that runs to the end of 2018. And leveraging that significant support, we hired a consultant who came in and ran an investment campaign. So we have investment commitments from local and regional private sector companies that will provide at least a third of our funding through that same period.
And then you also mentioned that now you're beginning to get fees again from development.
Yes.
So I took what you said there in that statement, and I looked in our budget book and could not, and their expenditures and revenues on pages, mostly nothing else but those on these pages. But I didn't see any distinction between the sources of money, and I wondered if that's reflected somewhere in the presentation that's in our budget book.
I haven't seen your budget book. I'm not sure I want to see your budget book, but I can just give you an example of our 2015 budget. The employer investment was $232,800. Not so coincidentally, the TCIDA, TCDC investment was the same amount, and the county investment was $224,654. And then we have a little bit of other income from rent and some of the other programs we administer, like the Tourism Capital Grant Program.
Joe, do you want to get in here?
Yeah, I could. On Michael's slide and in our budget, we show only our contribution to TCAD, so it doesn't show those other sources. It's that slide that he had up that had a few numbers on it. That's basically our commitment. And then the offsetting revenue is the room tax revenue. And what's left is supported by our property tax contribution. So if you recall Michael's slide, maybe one or two in, when he said he was going to leave that to me. There you go. So our total commitment to the agency is $231,400, of which $125,000 under the room tax agreement is covered by room tax, leaving $106,000 in property tax support. And you can see that's actually one of the sources of property tax reduction carrying into 2016. It's a smaller property tax contribution than it was the year before.
I guess what's striking me now, it's just the start of the budget, so it hadn't completely sunk in. We deal with a lot of agencies, and our contribution is a really small part of their overall budget. But I find it helpful to know what their overall budget is so I see our little share in context.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something simple that you have on a piece of paper that you could send?
Well, we don't have a 2016 budget yet.
How about the 2015 one.
Certainly, we have. I can send you the and any member that's interested at our 2015 budget, but it's again around $737,000, and very, very roughly a third county support, a third fee-based income, and a third from what we call investors from the local and regional business community. But we can, I can certainly provide you with a detailed budget if you'd like that.
We have a contract with you as our main economic development entity.
Yes.
Carol, and then Will.
Yeah, just a quick one probably for Joe or Kevin on our budget book. The line comes up as contribution to SP agencies. What does SP stand for?
Sponsored.
Sponsored. Okay, sponsored. Thank you. Are abbreviations spelled somewhere in our book? Or?
I think that's a consistent abbreviation for SP. If you look, I just looked at a couple. So the library, TC3, some others. It's a consistent abbreviation, and it does stand for sponsored.
Yeah, and I'll just point out that for those who are interested, if you look at our budget electronically, which I do because it's lighter to carry around, if you search for example, TCAD, you'll can see where it spells out under the room tax that portion of the contribution. So there is more information in here than it comes out on the direct TCAD pages, as is true for many of our agencies.
Will, and then Martha.
Another question, Joe. Joe, remind us that use of the room tax, which is going way up this year, it's like doubling, essentially, if I'm not right. How does that take place? So what will be the effect over the remaining years?
Yeah, it's by agreement. So these are fixed amounts that will be contributed each year. So in 2016, it will be $125 in room tax. That will go up to $200,000 and then to $205,000. Now, the important, I guess, context for that is, and if you look back through the work that was done as a part of the study, it's believed still that growth should cover these increased allocations for TCAD. So when we ran the projections for the task force, I think we ran them at 5%, and growth was more than adequate to cover the growth in the allocation of TCAD. Just to do a little sensitivity, I've recently run them at 3%. Even at 3% growth of overall room tax revenues, it's still growth as opposed to taking away from somebody else, zero sum, that goes to fund TCAD. So that's still, again, at 3%, that still holds.
And I have some data that might be useful as well. If we look at the amount of funds that the county is delivering to or investing in TCAD that's coming from the room tax, it looks like it's going to end up being about 5.2% of the entire room tax revenue. So 5.2% of the entire room tax collected. The Hilton and Marriott projects are projected to pay about $600,000 in new room tax dollars once they get up and running. And those were two projects that we delivered incentives to.
Martha, you had your hand up?
Yeah, a little bit different. What, Michael, just kind of stepping back from these kind of details, there's so much that you have, your small staff does, and it's really impressive. And kind of where do you see any storm clouds? I mean, where do you see anything that, we really ought to be paying attention to in the next couple of years? I mean, your ongoing stability of your budget was one that took a lot of work, but I think that's in good shape. If you're working on recapitalizing the loan fund, that's great. But what other areas do you think, we're really not watching? Or maybe we are watching, like I'm thinking the airport, but what keeps you up at night?
Well, I'm heavily medicated, so I fall fast asleep. I would say we've addressed some of the things that are going to be heavy lifts that are complex, and there's a lot of different perspectives. One is energy, and that's why TCAD is devoting so much staff time to the Energy and Economic Development Task Force. And I really think the other one is workforce development. We're so fortunate to have so many quality jobs either being created or the potential of being created, yet we have unemployed and underemployed people, people trapped in poverty that aren't being prepared for those jobs. The 2010 census tells us that there's 1,500 families in Tompkins County living in poverty. So I think it will be disaster, but it'll be a real failure if either those companies can't grow because we won't be able to provide them with the labor they need, or if those jobs are filled by people that commute in from outside Tompkins County. There's a lot of discussion about local labor building things. I'm more concerned about local labor working in the companies we incentivize. And right now we have thousands of people that commute in from outside of Tompkins County when we have local people living in poverty. And that's a tragedy, and we need to work hard at fixing that problem. It's a problem that's endemic in the United States, with the only successful manufacturing we have left in the United States is manufacturing that uses technology. And that happens a lot, and it's going to happen more in Tompkins County. But for us to take advantage of those opportunities and fix the poverty issue, we need to invest more in workforce development. And one of the things we're doing to hopefully address that is working with manufacturers to study what their real needs are, and hopefully at the other end of that, we'll create a training program that will be accessible to those that are living in poverty, that are underemployed, have two or three jobs, that can take advantage of these great opportunities. Last year at this time, I had a slide up about Binoptics that it's super high tech. I can't even begin to describe what they do. But they make a real effort to hire unemployed people and train them just because of the passion of the management team. But not all companies can do that on their own.
Do we have a good enough connection to the schools, to the high schools?
That's an issue. In this town, there's a real bias against working in manufacturing and a bias for sending little Johnny and Mary Genius off to an Ivy League school when there's great job opportunities out there where you might be happier and might actually end up making a lot more money than if you have a degree in art history. Does anyone have a degree in art history here? I've just insulted.
Stop it, please.
Or
any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Michael, Heather, thank you very much. County Clerk Maureen is here, and we're on chapter 4, section 4, page 50. They have 1 OTR number 16. Maureen, welcome. And Alana, am I right?
Yes, you're right.
Thank you.
Okay, so these are the numbers that were coming in for our four departments: county clerk, motor vehicles, records, and central services. We are the same on the FTEs. And our over-target request is $50,000. It's one time. It's for scanning of pockets of county records that we know we have to take care of. So I just want to talk about a little of the things we've been working on. We've had great success in our shared services grants. We heard recently, not official, but we will be receiving $150,000 this year to scan and work with all the town and village courts in the county. So we have received over $1.6 million in grant funding from New York State Archives. And talking about our shared services, here are some pictures from some of our meetings. We get all the clerks from every municipality together a couple times a year, and it's a real learning experience. There's been no pushback. It's been a great project. A lot of doors open as conversations happen. Most of them at lunch afterwards on new ideas and new initiatives. So it's been a real good project. We recently implemented e-filing of our court records so they can be filed electronically by law firms. And here's just a picture. We do education with the Bar Association, one of our classes. And our bunker, which I'm so happy to have this bunker. we are almost totally moved out of the old library. We will be moved out in a few weeks completely. The bunker is getting pretty full, but we are working on them. We had some kids this summer work for us, and they verified the boxes that were scanned, and I think they worked through about 7,000 boxes checking them before they're sent out for shredding. One of the things that we're constantly doing is arguing with New York State DMV on the revenue and the retention. We find that they keep pushing more and more back to us and making it no fee so that we're having to do the work for them. So we are doing a Keep a Local campaign. We have posters up. We're going to be putting them around town and other places we can find. We have been doing Facebook and Twitter. We recently put something on Facebook or Twitter. Her son had to help us. Some online, Ithaca Mags picked it up, and we had probably 60 comments on it, and not one was negative about our DMV. So we're just pushing this, putting up posters, reminding people to not send it in, bring it to us, you know, keep the money local. Just last week, we had an Ithaca Times article, and it was, you know, I just love to see these things. I take it down to DMV, and they're just so happy. One of the comments was it was home of the best DMV in the state, if not the world. Money motivates a lot of things, but it doesn't necessarily generate excellence. At the Thompson County DMV, it does. And then last thing is the office seems to care about quality. It wasn't just money. So it was a really good article. It was nice to read. We've received quite a few awards for our records work through Challenge, New York State Archives. We got to go to California in January. We got a big award out there. We got to bring 10 clerks with us, so they were very happy. I made them all wear glow-in-the-dark stuff. But it was a good project, and it shared how we work well together. We just received Top Digital County for the second year in Charlotte. And then we received the Harvard Ash Center Award for the Bright Ideas Program on our shared services. And that's pretty much it. I'm kind of optimistic, so we show all the good things.
Questions for Maureen. Michael.
Maureen, I think I asked this last year. I think it was Erie County that actually hands out different envelopes for people to mail in their registrations. I think they give them blue envelopes and to throw away the pink ones. And that gets mailed to the local DMV?
Yeah, we're trying more of that. One of the things we're doing is we're working with the car dealers or with people who come in. We've created these postcards, and it tells them about their money and keeping it local. But what we do for the ones with the dealers is we're saying your dealer has made a commitment to keep the money local because they do bring all their work to us and not do it themselves, you know, hire a third party. So they've made that commitment. So we thank the dealer, we thank the person, and tell them about how to do it. And we're giving this out with all the dealer when they get the new cars. It starts out, you know, congratulations on your new vehicle. So we're giving those out. And, you know, Roxanne and I have been working on a lot of different things, so we're really trying to get out there and get more knowledge about where the money goes.
Martha.
Thanks, Maureen. The OTR, is that for Challenge Industries again to
yes.
The contract?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. And there's been a county clerk in the news lately. Do you do marriage licenses?
We do not. We divorce them.
What?
We do the divorces, so we don't do the marriages. The city and town clerks do the marriage licenses.
Okay.
It would be bad if we did both.
You what?
It would be bad if we did both, because there would probably be a chart on how long marriages would last, you know, so.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Carol?
On the OTR, I see it's a one-time
mm-hmm.
request. Is that something that you anticipate being done, or I hope so.
You know, we asked for an OTR 2 years ago. We got half of it. This is like the other half. You know, as people, the departments come out and they become more IT, you know, they're getting these new software programs that handle it, so they stop making the paper, which is what we need them to do, stop making it. and because we're tired of scanning it. So that's happening, but we're still finding pockets of storage areas here and there. So we want to take care of those.
Do you have any sense of how many more of our departments are not fully digitized yet?
No, I think IT has been working with a lot of them as they get the new software on, and because they know our dilemma that we don't want to be scanning it, we don't want to be printing it. So that's, they've been working on that with them.
Anyone else? Thank you very much, Maria Alana.
Thank you.
County historian, Carol Kamen. County historian is section 4, page 55, 1 OTR, number 17.
Budget for 2016 remains the same except for the OTR, which is the $25,000 on the lower line, or the upper line, somewhere, it's hiding. The lower line, which is for the celebration of the county's bicentennial of a county, founded in 1817. We are hoping to both educate people about what the county does, explain how the county has come to do the things it does, and entertain people at the same time. And there is a small commission working on a program right now. It's a one-time request.
Questions for Carol? No one? Martha?
So this is for 2016, so we'll probably want to spend some money in 2017, right? Also?
I think what we're hoping to do, and I can't speak for the commission because we haven't really gotten that far, we are hoping to do a number of videos explaining what people in county jobs do, and that would be probably spent in 2016 in order to be ready for 2017. We are also trying to do a number of landmarking things. I don't know what landmarking things. County road signs, focusing on the beginning of each of the towns and when they came into the county, and then to do a number of house signs around the county showing where interesting people have lived or things have happened. And we are now planning on two Underground Railroad signs of we have two explicit spots, and we will put up two signs for that. And we are open to other events and people. We would like this to be a very interactive commemoration. We would like you to note that on the sign outside the county courthouse, the date is wrong. And we think we better say it before anybody else points it out. It was April 6th, not April 17th, which is what the sign says. So we will point that out. Better than someone else yelling at us.
Anyone else? Joe.
To Martha's question, this is a one-time request. However, I think the notion is to carry it into a second year so that you have money for preparation in 2016 and to come back to the legislature for another allocation next year, allow you the decision to either fund that or not fund it in 2017. So in the back of my mind, I would assume that we will be coming back in 2017 for another installment.
Yeah, I would think so. And I would think events and, you know, party hats and I don't know what else, but, you know, this doesn't happen very often. So
it doesn't happen often.
So thanks.
And the county has changed, and the county is not necessarily, as you all know better than anyone, like other counties. And people in the county don't really know a great deal or understand a great deal about what the county does for us, what the state has pushed on you, how the county has changed, and the things that this county in particular wants because we are who we are. So I think it's a great time for us to do education and to have a jubilation and to do some place marking.
Anyone else? Carol, thank you very much for your work and all the people that help you. We appreciate it very much.
A lot of people who help. Thank you, Jim.
Okay. County Office for the Aging, Section 4, page 72, OTR number 18.
everybody.
Good evening.
Let's take it away.
Go ahead.
Okay. Let's see. So our 2016 budget is not that radically different overall when you look at the expenditures, revenues, and net local from 2015. But I did want to talk about four major influences, or you know, just some things that are going on statewide that affect us locally. At the Office for the Aging here. A couple are statewide and a couple are local issues. The first is the regionalization of the long-term care ombudsman program. This is initiated by the State Office for the Aging. And as many of you know, the goal of the long-term care ombudsman program is to train and certify volunteers who advocate for residents of long-term care facilities. We've been doing that here locally in Tompkins County since 1995. And this year in 2015, the state is regionalizing the entire program and putting it out for competitive bid. We were successfully awarded the contract to administer the regional program for Chemung, Schuyler, and Tompkins counties. That's going to start in starting October 1st of 2015. And that means to us that the program revenue is increasing from about $14,000 a year to $113,000 a year at least 5 years. And what that means for us is that we, our program coordinator who worked on this program as part of her job, it will now be her entire job, plus another half-time FTE. So that's the first thing that's going to be impacting us and showing up in the 2016 budget. The second thing is another statewide initiative, which is the New York Connects Balancing Incentive Program, or BIP. And this initiative is going to strengthen what the state is calling the No Wrong Door single entry point for long-term care services in New York State. So Office for the Aging programs, New York Connects programs across New York State have all been awarded these funds to increase local capacity. And the funds are designated to be spent on personnel and technology and infrastructure. And they are a high proportion of these funds are expected to be ongoing. The state has not said quite how much yet. But our program revenue has increased from about $44,000 a year for New York Connects to about $270,000, we think the large proportion of which will be ongoing. And what this funding has enabled us to do, and you'll see this in our full-time equivalent chart, is that we have increased the proportion. Well, I should back up and say that this New York Connects program is has always been a partnership between the Office for the Aging and the Department of Social Services and their long-term care unit. So what we're doing with a portion of the money is to increase the amount of salary that we're paying for two long-term care services staff at Department of Social Services. And we are absorbing one full-time position in our office from DSS, so that you'll see will increase our full-time equivalents, but it won't change the overall county roster of full-time equivalents. And then it will be netting us one new full-time equivalent New York Connects coordinator, which we need to have for this initiative. We're also going to be using some of these funds for one-time expenses for computer replacement and office equipment. The third major influence that I'll just touch upon is, and I've many of you know about this also, we have in the past year restructured our personal emergency response system program, our PERS program. That program offers medical alert machines to individuals at risk of falling or other emergencies.
In 2015, we subcontracted with Doyle Medical Monitoring out of Rochester, New York, who provides the technology, the call center, and the client billing for the program. And through that, we've seen improvements in the technology and a reduction in client fees overall. We've been able to retain the strengths of our PERS program, where our staff are still performing the installations and the service calls, connecting with individuals in their homes, and being able to help them with other programs and services if appropriate. And we receive a small reimbursement from Doyle on a monthly basis to do that. So the projected revenue for our PERS program is decreasing from about $90,000 a year to, we're projecting, $32,000 in 2016. This is the transition year where we're really finding out what the program costs or revenues and expenditures are going to be. But at the same time that we're seeing this decrease in revenue in the PERS program, we're no longer doing the client billing function, and a lot of the service calls have decreased because the technology is more reliable. The technology in people's homes has been updated. I won't say it wasn't reliable. It was just coming to the end of its useful life, and we were needing to do a lot of replacement. So that's what's happening there with the PERS program. We've been able to reduce staff, and we just had a staff person who retired, so it was through attrition that we were able to do that. And then finally, I wanted to inform you that what I have done in the 2016 budget is bolstering our ICEP program, the Expanded In-Home Services for the Elderly, which offers case management and home care services for individuals whose incomes are slightly above the Medicaid eligibility. And I've done this through the savings that were achieved through some of the revenue enhancements from the other programs that I just mentioned. So basically, in 2013, we saw New York State ICEP funding increased by about $23,000. But due to other pressures on the budget in that year, I opted to decrease our local share in ICEP by about $27,000 because it was needed elsewhere in the budget. So that funding, the ICEP funding, remained flat in that year or slightly decreased. Some of the pressures that occur annually on the ICEP budget is that we increase our home care rates each year to our subcontractors, and our overall program revenue has been flat, which leads to a decrease in overall hours purchased by the home care agencies and the number of clients that we've been able to serve. So in this 2016 budget, I'm increasing the ICEP local share by $42,000, which restores the local share to the 2013 levels and adds an additional $15,000 to meet the growing demand for service, for home care services. So all of these funds will go to serve clients. It won't have an effect on full-time equivalents. And again, I was able to do this through some of the savings that we've achieved in other areas of the budget. This is the chart of our full-time equivalents. It's been relatively flat, and in 2016, we're adding 1.71 full-time equivalents. Again, this is the addition of the New York Connects coordinator position, a half-time ombudsman position, and a slight increase in hours for some of our staff in the front office. And then I think this is my last slide. My last point. The over-target request that was not supported in the recommended budget, and this was a $22,080 request for an increase for FoodNet to maintain their workers at the living wage. And I can share a little bit more information about this request. As you know, FoodNet has been a living wage employer up until this May when alternatives living wage guidelines increased. And in order for FoodNet to maintain that living wage standard, it would require an overall funding increase of about $32,000 and some change. Through a state program that we are administering locally, there's a direct care funding through the State Office for the Aging, we can apply for reimbursement for some wage, salary, and benefit increases for direct care workers. That applies to some positions in our office as well as some positions among our subcontractors. And FoodNet is applying for these funds and is eligible to claim $10,254 in those funds. It will fund up to 2% of salary and fringe increase for direct care workers. So that's the maximum that they can apply for that. So with the expectation that they will receive that amount, the amount that they would still be needed to bring their workers to the livable wage standard is $22,080, and that was in the over-target request. And that's it for me.
Are there any questions? Michael, Will, Martha, Peter. Go ahead, Mike.
Lisa, I'd just like to continue on this FoodNet issue. So you're asking for a full target, not a one-time increase. Is that right?
Yes.
So when we gave, I think, one-time money last year, the idea was that it would be one-time, as I recall. Was that one? Am I correct, Joe?
No, it was target.
It was target. Yeah. Okay. But anyway, let's say AFCU next year says, oh, it's up another 9% because rents are so high. At what point do we keep or do we stop just adding to that and because the program needs to be self-supporting?
Yeah, I think it's a philosophical question for the legislature. I know that FoodNet has, upped their game in terms of their board trying to up their fundraising and some of their service contracts wherever possible to make their program sustainable. And they expected to be able to do that after, coming out of quite a significant deficit. So I don't know how to answer to that question, but
thanks.
I have Will, and that followed by Martha, Peter, and then Carol.
I was supposed to ask the question, but my answer is that I hope we'll give it a serious look because I think it's a very valuable program, and the cost of living does change, so I think it's entirely appropriate to reexamine. However, my question really is on the PERS. You said this is a transition year. As I recall, Lisa, the usage of our old system was going down. I was wondering, has that pattern reversed?
Boy, it sure has. We're doing all kinds of new installations at this point, and we've been doing a lot of program outreach about the new service, some of the added benefits of the new service, and there's a new sliding fee scale. At the top of which in our last program was $36 a month, which was higher than most market rate programs. Now the highest level is $25 a month, which is on a par with many of the other programs. So we're finding many new subscribers at all of the different levels, but many at the $25 level.
Right. I'm really glad to hear that's working out. As you know, I had real concerns going in, but credit you and your office for all the work you put to make this. It's an unusual arrangement, and I'm delighted to see it working. Thank you.
Martha, and then Peter.
Thank you, Jim. Lisa, back to FoodNet. So that state money is the direct care funding. That's not a match where we have, it has to be matched locally. Okay.
And that's ongoing funding also, which is great. They'll be able to apply for it year after year.
Does that, where are we on, say, home care workers who, you know, whether it's Staff Kings or a Visiting Nurse Association, whoever, whatever contracts we have, where are they with respect to, you know, their wage rates?
Many are below the living wage rate, and that is a concern and a difficult issue to address. When we were looking overall at living wage for subcontractors, that this issue came up. And for us, the issue was if we provided them with increases in funding in order to raise their workers to the living wage, our funding pays only a small proportion of the overall funds that they get in order to pay their workers. So it's our funding, it's Medicaid funding, it's private pay, et cetera, and our funding is only a fraction. So it became evident from hearing from our subcontractors that administratively it would be very difficult for them to address this without having a different rate of pay for each person, you know, depending upon the payer source of the client. And they didn't want to distinguish that. So, for instance, if we raised our rates for ISIP clients and they were serving an ISIP client, they might make a living wage, but then if they served a Medicaid client, their wage would decrease. They didn't want to do that. And that's kind of... That's the overall crux of the issue, is that they blend all of these rates to create their hourly rate for workers.
Okay. On FoodNet, do you know how many people are in this category?
Of direct care.
For whom, you know, we have a...
I can probably get you that information.
Steve's right here.
Oh, there he is. Oh, Steve, great. Please come. I didn't see Steve come in.
Just got here.
Perfect. Yes, please do. So the question was approximately how many workers at FoodNet fit the direct care category that would, you know, for living wage.
The direct care category is everyone that's involved in direct service to the elders, and that's everyone except our administrative staff. So we have 21 positions, so about 18 positions would actually be qualified for that.
Okay, thank you. And so a question to Joe really is, when we looked at living wage, like for county contracts, et cetera, and I know, like, the Drop-In Children's Center, which has got a new name, spacing on, and home care was, those two were areas that were really an issue. So do you have a sense of where we are, and are these still the same gap areas?
Yes. So it's home care, it's day care. It's some of the larger institutional providers like the Racker Center and CARS, where we're basically a pass-through, and they serve almost like home care. They serve clients that go well beyond those that are supported by county programs. So those are still the ones that are out there and not generally paying a living wage. Apart from those, we're in a really good place. So I think it's almost across the board where our contractors are paying a living wage. So this one would, again, FoodNet was, and if you recall, it was 2 years ago, a year ago, that we did increase the allocation mid-year to allow them to get to living wage. I think that was north of $20,000 at that point. So you're probably going to ask why I didn't do it, and the matter is simply resources. There was, with 1.3% in essentially the allowance, I just didn't have the capacity to do this and also cover other priorities. Frankly, I think the 9% increase in living wage caught us off guard a bit. Inflation was tracking, 1 to 2 over that couple-year period. Certainly housing prices affected the calculation of living wage, but I think the 9% has turned out to be a, pretty significant hurdle. So it's not funded, and it's not because I don't think that it deserves careful attention by the legislature. It's just that I didn't have the resources needed to get to that particular OTR.
So I guess I would just kind of say to my colleagues here that I think it's great we up the salaries for recycling workers, but for people who are in these direct care service positions, which happen to probably be mostly women, I'm not sure, but, direct care, daycare, I think we really need to take a hard look at that. So I don't know if, Joe, you have kind of put that issue together into a dollar figure, but I wonder if as these weeks go on, if that's something that you could...
I can give you the results of last year's survey to see ins and outs. I can do that. This is the only request that we received that relates directly to the increased living wage. So if you looked across the board, we didn't get any other agency increases to reflect that at higher living wage. So I'm not sure if that's the tally you were looking for, or if it was, call it, the compliance level that we saw last year in the survey, which of those numbers you'd like, but we can...
Okay, I guess I don't
provide you data.
I don't know if the daycare program is in here. And home care agencies, if I'm a little puzzled, so you're saying if they got more money from us, they wouldn't know how to spend it to improve their wages?
essentially, they would be hard-pressed to... target the money because of...
Okay, let me ask a different way. So if I have three different clients and one is paid by ISEP and somebody else is paid by Medicare and somebody else is paid by Medicaid, I get three different rates?
Yes. The home care agency gets three different rates, and they average them to give you an average, to create your salary, so that you yourself as the worker would not be getting three different rates based on the client that you are seeing.
That's good news.
Yeah. And so what I hear back from them is that in order to if we were to increase their rate and say, pay because you serve, 20% of your clients are ISEP clients, we're giving you this increase, it would only apply to their ISEP clients, and then they would be forced to pay a differential based, on the scenario that you just put out. It would blend, but it wouldn't be enough, because the ISEP program is so relatively small. It wouldn't be enough to bring everybody up to the living wage, because the state funded programs outweigh the ISEP client pool.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Peter, and then Carol.
Yeah, a couple of things. You've had now how long is your experience with Doyle?
I believe we began the transition at the end of April, beginning of May this year.
This April, so you still haven't had a year with them.
No.
I was going to ask you how it works out. I mean, there were some concerns about working with a for-profit person. Have you heard any complaints about service or reliability of the instrument or anything like that, or more than you had before?
certainly not more than we had before. There have been some, you know, bumps in the road. We were expecting that, and I would say that there have been fewer bumps than we were expecting. That it's been pretty good. There are always issues here and there, but we've been overall quite pleased, and we've been hearing pretty good feedback from our clients, I would say.
Yeah, it would be nice to say a year from now to have a report on that to how it's worked out with Doyle, okay?
Yeah.
And the other comment I wanted to make is about one regarding what Martha has been asking all along. When we decided to do this, the living wage thing, I think we understood. I mean, we heard from people that some companies, for-profit companies, might be able to squeeze it out someplace to do it. But for not-for-profit companies have got essentially no other source of income. And there was no way, I think we all thought there was no way that we could force them to decrease spending in one place to pay our living wage thing. And that if we were going to do it, we were going to have to pay for it. And what's more, there was that those amounts were so large that we didn't anticipate being able to pay for it ourselves. That's the way I remember the conversation going. And is that still the situation that describes something like this?
I think so. If I was surprised at all, it was by two things. One was by the size of the increase, but the second was, so far at least, we have not had a stream of agencies coming to us asking for additional dollars to cover this increase in wages. So I'm hopeful they have found ways to be able to accommodate the new living wage. But again, right now, this is the only one that we have seen.
I mean, it's
request.
Like, you know, again, it'd be interesting to look a year from now or 6 months from now and see if we start to get problems from those agencies.
Carol.
I'm one of the people who always wanted us to be able to get people up to the living wage, especially the nonprofits, based on the kind of things Peter was saying. I'm looking at Appendix B in our book on pages 3 and 4, where the COFA contracts are listed, and the FoodNet contracts total something around $700,000. So I'm trying to understand more about, you know, how much of that money is an issue with the salaries and wages, and how much might just be going to pay for food and transportation and other expenses. So just get a context for why we can't get the 22,000, is that the amount, into the 700,000 somehow more easily. And then also something about the workers that we're talking about, how many, where they're located, and whether they're at levels and family sizes that might put them in need of our food services, if they don't get a living wage.
I'm just looking up our
electronic.
Yeah, we do have several contracts with FoodNet, which are earmarked, you know, federal and state dollars for to provide congregate meals, home delivered meals, nutrition counseling and education are factored into those. Those federal and state funding streams have remained, I would say, relatively flat over the years. And they cover the cost of, and Steve, you could probably speak to this better than I could, food and expenses for the program. And that they play a large role, but not the only role, in FoodNet's overall budget. They still need to fundraise and ask for participant fees and, you know, or participant contributions to make their budget whole. So do you want to?
Yeah, I can probably Yes, I'd be happy to. Our overall annual budget is about $1.2 million, and so the Office for Aging with about equal amounts of fairly even amounts of federal, state, and local dollars that comes through the Office for Aging and through our contracts pays for about 60% of or provides about 60% of our revenues for the year. We fundraised about 15%, and we have participant contributions and program service fees that cover the balance. That's the money coming in. It's a labor intensive, and our labor and fringe together are about for next year, I would estimate about $750,000, and so the remainder of that after the seven, which is a little bit over half of our expenses, and the other is divided up. Food is the next largest category, but we have our supplies, our utilities, overhead things like insurance. So all of those come in, our nutrition, education, and counseling, all of those are also the expenses that we have. And part of the reason for requesting the $22,000 is we feel that for that, for wages, we need to have a sustainable and reliable source of funds that are covering those, and it's much stronger than saying granting a raise and then going out to fundraise annual donations for it. We find that we do better. We do provide 15% of our annual budget through charitable giving. We try to focus that as much as possible on special projects and equipment as opposed to ongoing labor costs.
And then the second part of the question was about the number of positions and the position titles.
Where they're located. Are they all here in Tompkins County? And are they people who will end up on our own food support roles in other ways?
We
don't do this.
We have one part-time employee from King Ferry, so that's Cayuga County, but the others are all Tompkins County residents. The majority work that are through our office here at Trip Hammer Road, but there are two that are in downtown Ithaca, and then we have one each in Lansing and Groton that are working at locations there, but they almost all live right in Tompkins County.
Thank you.
Any other questions from members? Julie?
Less a question than a comment. Not everybody looks at the appendices in our budget book, but if you do look at the fees charged, it is so dramatic to see how the PERS ones have been simplified and have gone down. Thank you.
Yes.
I'm going to ask myself a question. Jim, are we having voting meetings this year? The answer is yes. And I'm thinking that this request is one that may be on the agenda for the voting meeting. So is there anything else from anyone? Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Soil and Water, John Nigley is here. And his budget is on Section 5. Page 45, he has an OTR, 63, and it's for, Dave and I know it's for hydrilla and the care and feeding of. Go ahead, John.
Well, thank you for the time, and I just want to thank you for the 2015 budget request that you gave us last year. We've put that to use for a 2012 Nissan Rogue that we purchased, and also we hired a senior account clerk, Kim Jackson, who started with us in July. And then also we've increased everybody's health insurance up to the 80% across the board. So I just want to thank you for that in 2015. And I'm going to jump right into the 2016 budget. So in 2015, we had the $214,000, $330. 2016, we are asking for an increase of $40,000. One-time increase for the hydrilla program manager, and we'll get into that. But then that will bring our 2016 budget to $243,317, and that is in the recommended budget that Joe's given you. So some things that are going to affect our 2016 budget going forward, and I think they're going to affect in a good way, at least the first two. The New York State Ag and Markets has given us a $668,000 grant to implement on-farm pollution abatement controls for water quality improvement. And we also have three applications in to New York State DEC for water quality improvement funding also. And then we also have the hydrilla eradication efforts that are going to affect our budget. We have some various different sources of funding for that, the DEC, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, New York State Parks, and we have the county and city revolving loan that I think all of you are aware of. We have $200,000 from the county and $100,000 from the city that we've been working with. To go into the agricultural funding a little bit further. Like I said, a $668,000 grant for 2015, that was awarded in 2015 for work in 2016. We'll be doing it on a farm out in the Fall Creek watershed, and that's to improve their silage leachate practices, to basically take away that leachate that's flowing into Fall Creek. And we also have two other Ag Nonpoint grants that we are working to complete right now, and those will be completed at the end of 2015. So this will be our only open contract with New York State Ag and Markets. The water quality improvement funding, we submitted three applications in partnership with some other agencies. The first one was for hydroseeding roadside ditches. That was strictly with the Soil and Water District. Helps the county highways, the town highways, to put hydroseed on ditches and improve ditch maintenance practices throughout the county. We've also worked with the Tompkins County Stormwater Coalition and the Cornell Cooperative Extension to put together a grant for updating the mapping of stormwater and sewer conveyance systems. Right now we have some mapping that's required by the New York State DEC in their MS4 laws, but we need to update those maps, so we put a grant application in for that. And we've also worked with the Tompkins County Solid Waste and Cuga Compost to put in a grant for utilizing compost that they've been trying to utilize in the past for stormwater best management practices. So instead of silt fencing, we can use filter socks in replace of that. So it's a new emerging best management practice that we can put on the landscape. And those total funds are $273,675 that we've applied for. So to get to the meat of our request tonight, as I mentioned, the county and city have a revolving loan that we've entered into to help us reimburse a reimbursement from the New York State DEC. We do not have $300,000 of cash on hand, so and DEC needs a reimbursement. They need to see upfront charges on this. So that's been a huge boon to the effort. So I just want to thank you for that. We also have funding from U.S. Fish and Wildlife and the New York State Parks, but those are strictly in-field herbicide application plant monitoring costs that we cannot apply to personnel. And thirdly, we have funding from New York State DEC, the large grant that's been funding a lot of this effort. We've been utilizing that to pay the hydrilla program manager salary, but that line item in that grant budget will dry up in June of 2016. So we will be needing $40,000 to get the hydrilla program manager through the last two quarters of 2016. So we understand, you know, at the outset in 2011 when we first started this program that this was going to be a long-term 10-year program, at least to get this to an eradication phase. We're still in that eradication mindset. We want to totally get rid of it. We do not want to try to maintain this or have it pop back up on us. So a program manager is needed on a full-time basis. When we first started this, we were trying to piecemeal this into other people's jobs descriptions, and things were falling through the cracks, and we could not keep up. So this is definitely a position that we need to maintain on a full-time basis. And we are in discussions with other entities of the city of Ithaca. I've had discussions with Roxy Johnson from the water filtration plant of how maybe we can help offset this after 2016, because this will have to be an ongoing effort as long as the program is ongoing. So we know that we're going to have to kind of piecemeal this funding together a little bit after 2016. So I'm going to stop right there. If there's any questions specifically, I only have about three more slides, but if there's specific questions about the...
John, you want to go through the slides or you want to do the questions now? Whatever.
I can go through the slides.
Yeah, please okay. Do. Go to the end and we'll...
So the last couple slides here are just discussing a little bit about the financial health of the district. And so I just put this graphic together. The red line that you see, the top line, is the county appropriations that have been given to the soil and water from 2001 all the way to 2014. And you see the spike there at the very end of the tail here, 2012. That was as a result of the rebuilding process with the district, stabilizing the district and getting us on a solid financial footing. The blue line that you see is the net position of the district from audit reports all the way back to 2001. You can see we dipped down in 2011 to a negative $300,000 net position. And a lot of that was a result of the ag and markets deficit for the grant repayment plan. We had $396,000 of grant repayment that we needed to pay back to ag and markets in 2011. At this current date, we have just about $100,000 left on that grant repayment. So we've significantly cut into that deficit. And the New York State Ag and Markets they haven't locked us in yet. They're still working out the contract details, but they'd like to see this paid off in a 10-year time frame. So that's about a $10,000 to $12,000 a year payment that we would have to make. And that's something that's factored into our budget and we're comfortable paying. If things line up, I'd like to be able to pay this off even sooner. I mean, this is something that the Ag and Markets has really been gracious with us and extended this out with a no-interest loan, I guess, so to speak, or repayment plan over a 10-year period. So I think we can get it knocked out of there before 2024, but that's the projection. And I guess lastly, in my slides here, I just want to kind of give you a cost-benefit analysis of every dollar that the county provides to the Soil and Water District through our state and federal grants and programmatic support that we get every year. You're getting about $6 back into the Tompkins County economy through other sources. So with that, I'll have any questions.
Oh, Martha, you had your hand up and there was somebody else, and I don't remember who it was. No one else? Okay. Go ahead. Oh, Mike, and then go ahead, Martha, please.
Thank you, John. I missed how much you said the city and the county each puts into the revolving loan fund for Hydrilla.
So $200,000 from the county and $100,000 from the city.
Okay. And so this $40,000 is going to get, is that the full gap from June 2016 to December 2016? So this request will cover the entire gap.
Yes.
Okay. So we're not asking the city to help us with that.
No, with that piece, I think John has engaged the city in the longer term. If the position is going to be required for a while, we've encouraged John, and I think he's followed up on talking to the city about that.
Okay. And so the two graphs are really interesting. Now, it seems though you are working with Ag and Markets. They're kind of approving new projects for you, right?
Yes.
So we've gotten them back to being willing to work with us.
Exactly. Yep.
Well, awesome. That's great. And so this repayment plan.
So the repayment plan boils down to, we've boiled it down to one contract that has money that was owed back to the state. You know, the deliverables were all met on the contract. There was just excess funds that need to be given back to the state, and that's what we're working on. So basically the state will keep open that contract until we repay the state back.
What's the total that is owed?
So
including what we've already paid.
So the total as of today is, I think it's like 101,000. I don't have the exact figure with me.
Remaining to be paid.
Remaining to be
paid. How much have we already paid?
Yeah, so we started with, so there was other multiple contracts that were needed to be paid out. And so we've paid from $369,000 in 2011. We had an outstanding deficit of that we needed to pay back to New York State. And we're down to $100,000 now.
Okay, I got it. And remind me when you started as director of the district.
2013, September of 2013.
All right. Thank you very much.
Michael, you had your hand up.
My question is answered. I wondered if we had copies of those charts, and they are here.
Yeah. I just want to make a comment. Mike was good enough to put David and myself over there in Soil and Water a couple of years ago, and one of my major concerns, and I know Dave's, was that the district get back on, you know, get themselves out of the dark side and move to the light side. And I think John has done that with some help from the board. The director is responsible for everything that happens there. The board oversees and tries to deal with, you know, gives him a guidance, but in no shape or form does the board operate the operation. The director operates the operation, and he's done a great job doing that. And I think we should be appreciative of that. So thanks, John.
Thank you.
Transportation planning.
Good evening.
Good evening.
It's great to be here.
Excuse me one moment. You're on your chapter 4, page 300. You have OTR 69. Sorry for interrupting. Go ahead.
No problem. My name is Dwight Mengel, Chief Transportation Planner in Department of Social Services. I've invited Christian Wells, the Executive Director of Gadabout, to join me tonight. We have two responsibilities primarily in transportation planning. First is to do grant administration, management, planning, and coordination. And the second thing is to have extensive service contracts to delivering service. And our net local for 2015 was 100,153, of which the county target is 85,153, and there was an additional 15,000 one-time request for Danby van pools. And one of the things I would like to share with you is that we went through a competitive round for federal rural transit funding, and which is managed by the State Department of Transportation, and we were successful. We and you'll see this in a resolution which will be before the board in October. We received $2 million for TCAT to purchase 5 buses. And we also were also awarded about $500,000 for mobility management projects. That includes, for the first time, working with other counties through the Way to Go program and professional travel training, which provides individual coaching for people to learn how to ride public transit or to make use of any mobility service. The second major influence in the budget request for 2016 is that for the first time the county support for Gadabout would decline by about $5,000. And that is due to a higher requirement for the county match for grant management, admin, and planning. So looking at expense broken down, as I mentioned previously, there's a 10% share for the county of $12,407 for the grant admin planning. And under the service contracts is where we have the county support for a Gadabout. And that's how we came in on target for the $83,535. Before we submitted our over-target request. I'm the full-time equivalent. And now we'd like to spend the rest of time talking about the over-target. I've asked for a total of $17,753 to support Gadabout. This is the first time we've had a over-target request to support Gadabout since ever. In 2015, as I mentioned, we had $76,206 for Gadabout. In 2016, that would decline. Otherwise, we put in for the over-target to increase the amount of support for Gadabout to the $88,881. From 98 to 2014, the county support for Gadabout was $75,000. And just to put that in context, is that the $75,000 in 1998, the value in 2015 is just under $110,000. I can attribute that the county is the major of the municipal funders for a gadabout. It's the largest one. The city of Ithaca is the second one. But since 1998, Gadabout had been able to expand service and to support its budget using new revenue sources other than coming back to the county. But for 2016, we are looking for some more county support. The use of the OTR first would be to restore the county funding to the 2015 level, and the second would be to provide the local match for the new Freedom program, which is an $80,000 program supported with federal and state funds with a $12,675 match. The new Freedom program primarily serves rural residents who use wheelchairs to enable them to commute to work in Ithaca. And it's a program which was looking for a source, a sustaining source of local support. It's a countywide program, and we thought that that necessary to look for that funding from the county. So with that, Kristen and I are willing to entertain your questions.
Michael.
Hi, Dwight. Yeah, Gadabout is certainly concerning for us all. Can you talk to us about what's happened with the Town of Ithaca contribution in the last couple of years?
Kristen, do you want to answer that?
Well, it was a shock to me to read it in the paper before receiving any information from the Town of Ithaca that our funding would be cut. I was homesick and actually had a board member call me and say, did you know that Ithaca is threatening to pull our funding? And I was unaware of that. And I have tried to reach out to the Town of Ithaca to no avail with getting a response. Our funding was supposed to be cut by half for 2015 and entirely by 2016. I had received a letter stating that our funding was not going to be cut, and a contract which I quickly signed and returned as soon as possible for the full amount. And I have yet to hear anything from the Town of Ithaca.
I can understand your concern here, but could you give me some figures? I mean, what would half of that have been, and they were proposing to go to zero this year at some point?
For 2016, it would be zero.
Okay, what from what?
I believe it was 12,000.
Okay, so if they were at some point giving you like 25,000, was that, or 24,000?
No, I think that 12 was the entire amount. I do not have the figures in front of me for the Town of Ithaca for the individual municipalities.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Excuse me, I just wanted to understand that. So, but you did have signed a contract for the 12 at this point.
Correct.
Thank you.
I want to make, well, no, Carol and then Dooley and then Dan.
So can you tell us something more about the number of people served with this portion, the new Freedom, it's an odd name, the new Freedom program and the general numbers served by Gadabout and how that would be affected without this?
Christian has the numbers.
Last year, Gadabout provided with all three services over 65,000 one-way trips. We served over 2,100 individual clients within Tompkins County. And of that number, 2,078 were for the New Freedom Program. This year, up until July, our number is at 1,768 people or one-way trips provided.
And what are the alternatives for people if you – so will the program go away entirely or you just can't serve as many people? And so what would be the implications and where else would people get be able to get rides?
Do you want me to take this one? Or?
Kristen, you better take this one.
When the New Freedom Program came about a few years ago, it was a brand new concept for people with disabilities that lived off of the ADA corridor, which is a three-quarter mile corridor from a fixed route TCAT service. So prior to that, there was no option for these people to have transportation after hours or weekends beyond the ADA service, which is limited to that three-quarter mile corridor from the TCAT service. As the word has gotten out of the New Freedom Program, our numbers have continued to increase since 2012.
One thing I'd say with New Freedom is that looking at the rides being taken is that it is very clear that the great majority of the trips are enabling people to work. And they're living where they can find affordable housing, and it is further away from where there's any other transit service. And the unemployment rate for people with disabilities is in excess of 75%. And so we certainly value the opportunity of programming federal and state funds to support this program, but we do need a solid local funding source to provide the last support. And since this is a service for the whole county, covering the whole county, we're looking for the county to really provide that support.
Dooley.
I think I heard you refer twice to something called a three-quarter mile corridor from TCAT service. I'm trying to picture what that means. I don't understand.
So Gadabout provides three types of service. We have our core mission service, which was started back in 1976, which provides transportation to anyone over the age of 60 or over within the county, and to people that have disabilities that prevent them from boarding or riding the TCAT bus. That's what Gadabout was built and founded on. With the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act in 1991, TCAT is mandated to provide service to those riders that have disabilities that prevent them from boarding and riding their bus. With the ADA portion of our service, we provide transportation contracted through TCAT to those people that live within three-quarters of a mile of a corridor of the fixed route.
The fixed route, TCAT fixed
the
route.
The TCAT fixed route, yes.
That's what I didn't understand. I thought you were talking about Gadabout having fixed route.
No, and that's the ADA portion of our service. And the third being the New Freedom Program, which extends that to any person within Tompkins County that has a disability that prevents them from boarding and riding the bus.
When you were asked about Town of Ithaca commitment, in passing, I think you said you didn't have the figures for all of the municipalities' contributions. So you get contributions from other municipalities?
Yes.
All of them?
A majority of them, yes.
Is that... That's easy information for you to supply us.
Yes, it is.
Could you do that, please?
Yes.
Okay.
Dan.
Thanks. On your slide number two, it says county support for Gadabout declines by $5,000 from 2015 due to higher county match for grant management. I'm not sure I understand that. Can you help me understand that line?
Sure. There was a federal transit program, New Freedom, that enabled 100% federal funding for project administration. And when we got New Freedom grants, I would earmark a proportionate amount to pay for 100% of admin costs of that grant. And so all of the other federal transit programs requires a local 10%. And so the state put up 10%, federal transit puts up 80%. So this is the first year in which I have no New Freedom grants. Those grant contracts are all closed. So I have no more of the 100% federal admin funds left. And so when I was building my budget, I really realized that we only use county funds for two purposes. One is for the admin, the grant management, and coordination, and then the other is for Gadabout. And so I was very reluctant, but with all of the grants that we have and the responsibilities that we have to our funders, I certainly could not recommend to reduce even moving $5,000 back to Gadabout. Basically takes 40% away from the grant admin budget, and you end up with a part-time person doing a full-time person's job. So that really could not happen. The other thing that happened is that's part of the $5,000 is that $1,200 was reduced in our target from $8,500 to the from the 85,000 figure to the 83,000 figure. So between the reduction in the target and the need to be able to demonstrate to the federal government that we do have a 10% match for those federal funds for admin, that is where the 5,078 came from.
So just to be clear, you're saying that at least part of it was federal money that used to come that is not coming anymore.
Right.
So, okay, so when it says county support, it could actually really say federal support declines. I mean, it sounds like both did, but.
Okay.
Dan, I'm going to let Joe jump in here a moment, okay?
Yeah, I think it's really important to be clear on this because we don't want to look more Grinch-like than we really are. We haven't cut county funding for this part of the budget, including Gadabout. What we're dealing with here is a changed state and federal funding situation where they're backing away, and the request, I think, at the risk of oversimplification, is to fill the void left by the state and federal governments. It's a valid request. You know, I think you've heard a couple of my bubble OTRs already tonight, things that were kind of on the list that we'd like to do if we had more money. But I do think if anybody is watching what's going on tonight, it's important that they know we haven't withdrawn our commitment to public transit or to Gadabout. What we're dealing with, again, is a pullback of aid by the state and federal governments that we're being asked to fill.
Right, and that's why I was just wondering, it says county support, but really it's federal support. And so I think we're trying to make the same point.
Martha, last question.
Worry a little bit about the Grinch. The Grinch factor here, where you're going to, you won't support food service workers and you won't support people with disabilities getting on a bus. Okay, Joe. I'm sorry.
Kristen, the pointing out that $75,000 doesn't go as far as it did, and you know how many years, 1998, is really worthwhile point to make. You said the city, Dwight. You said the city is the second largest funder for Gadabout.
Yes.
Okay. Do you happen to know how much they put in?
Let me interrupt here. What I would like from both of you is one sheet tomorrow to the county administrator's office on,
yes,
on all where the money comes from. Okay.
Yes.
And I really don't want you to guess at the.
I don't want to guess either.
Okay.
Okay, that'd be great. Yeah. What are the other municipalities put in? And I know, for example, the Recreation Partnership is really good about where their kids come from and different municipalities. Can you also give us a list that says we've got
ridership,
20 people in Dryden and that kind of thing?
Yes.
That would really, really be helpful. And, I mean, I think the other part of this is that I understand what you're saying about commuters, and that's really a powerful statement. It's also true that as more of us get older, that demand is the demand for the elderly side is going to get higher and higher. So, all right. I look forward to seeing the rest of the
conversation.
So if anybody would like to volunteer, feel free to contact me. We could use the drivers.
Let's leave it on the fact that we're all getting old. And you really don't want me driving your bus. Any other questions for these two individuals?
May I make a very quick statement?
Well, if it's on topic, yeah, sure.
Yes. I've been invited to speak at a number of other counties relating to this type of service. And I will say that there is nothing like Gadabout in New York State, where about two dozen agencies and municipalities came together in 76 and decided to create what would be a single nonprofit transportation corporation for this purpose. What I do find when I visit counties is that every human service agency has a van. At least one, maybe two. Now, they have the same fleet as would be Gadabout, but there's no coordination, there is no integrated program, there is none of the service that we're really talking about, is every agency is transporting their clients in their silos to their programs. And they just wonder how these people in Tompkins County, like, did this, which seems like such a huge lift, to come together, collaborate, consolidate, and really put energy and funding with one provider that, in my opinion, has done a remarkably effective job. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Let me just make one final comment along those lines. Dwight, and I've been here a while, many of us have, and we think about all the time. We get criticized for what we do, but in the final analysis, county government in Tompkins is pretty special, and if you compare it to all the others around us, we think we're in a pretty decent government. So thank you for the comments. Anyway, next time, folks, Weights and Measures is number one. I asked him if he wanted to Skype. He said no, he'd like to show up. So it's one of my favorites.